This is an exclusive online-only presentation from 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
This is the Spirits of Radio.
When high school chums Alex Lifeson and Gary Getty Winerib joined forces in a band in 1968 in Toronto, Canada, no one could have imagined how they would capture the hearts and minds of millions of rock and roll fans around the world. Named Rush by the brother of original drummer John Rutsey, Alex and Gary, who adopted the stage name of Geddy Lee, drafted drummer Neil Peart 4 months after the band released their first album and just 2 weeks before the Canadians would start their first United States tour. Singer, synth, and bass player Geddy Lee.
Well, when he joined, we really didn't even know him because he had auditioned. And, you know, Alex and I had been playing together for years and we kind of grew up together. So here was this new dude in the band who showed up for audition and played like a mother. I mean, he was so impressive. He had serious chops. But we didn't know him. And a week later, we were out on the road. So we had to kind of figure out who this guy was. And he always read books. And he was, you know, quite a serious guy. Slowly we figured each other out, you know, as you do when you're on the road for, you know, months on end. You either figure each other out or it doesn't work. He bonded with us, and we bonded with him, and it became a good partnership.
Guitarist Alex Lifeson.
When we first started out, you just did it, you know, and then once we got the American release and the American tours in 1974, I thought, this is unbelievable, and if it lasts 5 years, I'll be surprised. That'll be really amazing if it can last that long, because I really didn't think it would even go that long.
Together, they relentlessly pursued their passion for music and endless curiosity, ever evolving and expanding their sound until there would be no mistaking what the Rush sound was. Defining it, however, that's a whole other matter. They started out with blues-inspired hard rock, then graduated into long, musically complex songs whose lyrics drew on science fiction, fantasy, and philosophy. As they entered the 1980s, Rush tightened their songs into shorter pieces while blending in reggae and so-called new wave music, and they threw in synthesizers to the sound. Coming off of their 1980 breakthrough Permanent Waves, Rush toured behind that album for 6 months through 1980 to over 650,000 people across 96 shows, becoming their first tour to make a profit. Rush's drummer, the late Neil Peart, on the band's state of mind at that point.
It was a great summer, for example, when we were doing the songwriting. We'd rented Ronnie Hawkins' farm up near Peterborough, and so there was the classic setup in the barn, you know, start working on new material, and there was a little cottage on a little lake where I was working on lyrics during the day, and then we'd regroup later in the day, and we were staying up there and going home on weekends, so the perfect kind of a combination of a home life as well as professional life, and just in a great state of mind by that time. We'd been together for 6 years and had enough success to establish us at where the industry wasn't leaning on us anymore about what we were going to do, and there was a real maturity coming of age for us as a band, because we've been doing so much experimenting of all kinds as individual instrumentalists and as a group of instrumentalists, of coming up with like puzzles, solving puzzles of playing in odd times and putting big long epics together. And they were for a reason, you know, they were pure exuberance. There was nothing in self-indulgence or so-called pretentiousness about it. It was true boyish enthusiasm that was involved in creating all those things. But then we started whittling them down, and the changes around us are important too in the late 70s, and we were young enough and fan enough to be part of that and to respond to when punk became new wave, when the punk musicians started to get better. Stuart Copeland was telling me a little while ago that being around that scene at the time, he would say he would see the Sex Pistols bass player looking over Sting's shoulders to figure out what notes go with what notes.
Yeah.
It's inevitable that you want to get better, I think, no matter what you do. You know, even if you're a punk with an attitude, right, you play that thing every night, you're going to get better. And we soaked it all up. And that brought a concision to our arranging, but no less indulgence in that sense. You know, we still wanted it to be hard to play. And something I've realized over the years, every one of those songs was designed to play live. We were a live band, that's all we did. And when I put a drum part together, it was designed to be progressive in the architecture sense, and to be challenging enough to play night after night for who knew 30 years.
Right.
You know, we're playing this whole album now, 30 years later, without cynicism, you know, still liking to play those songs and still proud of them. So that was an important time musically around us, and a great time for the three of us in terms of getting along and sharing our goals and having a good time and making the music.
The music they made was the album Moving Pictures, which propelled the band to an even higher peak. For the 40th anniversary of this landmark album, Rush and UME are reissuing it in multiple formats, including a 3-CD deluxe version with the original album remastered and 2 extra CDs featuring the complete unreleased Toronto concert from March 25th, 1981. There's also a super deluxe box set with 3 CDs, 5 180-gram audiophile LPs, a Blu-ray audio disc presenting the first ever Dolby Atmos and new 5.1 surround album mix, and many collectible items. Hi, I'm Dan Neer, advising you to strap yourself in for an explosive peek behind Rush's creation of Moving Pictures, featuring the music from the 40th anniversary edition and the words of Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, and the late Neil Peart.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush, and welcome to the 40th anniversary edition of Moving Pictures. All access.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride. with today's Tom Sawyer. He gets high on you and the energy you trade. He gets right on to the friction of the day.
Part of the studio and part of the live version of Tom Sawyer, both found on the sumptuous new deluxe releases of Rush's Moving Pictures. Here's Neil Peart on the degree of difficulty playing it live 30 years after the album was released.
A lot of them, though, because they're so hard, what sustains that tension for a performer every night is because you're not sure if you're going to be able to do it. I'm sure that's it. And I mentioned before, Tom Sawyer remains so difficult to play. Although it seems a slow tempo, my right hand most of the time is going about as fast as it'll go, and every beat is full force. Foot, you know, my feet and hands are playing full force for that whole song. So just to execute it with strength and smoothness, and I mentioned that duality before is something that I've worked all these years in drumming 40 years of wanting to combine those elements of first I wanted technique, and you work all hard on technique, and then I wanted accuracy at all strength. Working in the studio with click track sequencers, accuracy was the gold standard, and then I wanted feel, and now I want that combination. When I play these songs now, I know I bring a better feel to them than I did then. You know, I have the strength and power and the speed, but so much more subtle control of time, and that's the reward thing. Again, we're in the middle of rehearsing these songs, playing them every day right now after all these years, and I still find myself getting inside them in that rhythmic way and feeling them in more subtle and thus, you know, more rewarding ways.
Geddy Lee.
It's just one of those songs that when we made it, had no idea it was going to have the impact that it had. Over time, it's kind of shown to be the quintessential Rush song for some reason. Wherever we go in the world, people identify us with that song. At the time we were making Moving Pictures with that on it, it was just another song. And mixing it as we would any other song without any special feeling for it one way or the other. And the universality of that song surprised me.
It's a song about a car. It's called the Red Barchetta.
Neil Peart on the song Red Barchetta.
That came about a magazine story that I'd read some years earlier that I really liked. It was set in a future dystopia when motorized vehicles were banned. So I just had an idea that it might make a neat little visual song. And we were into a lot of soundtrack mode at that time, too. Geddy was always a big music fan, and we often thought in terms of making the music tell part of the story, something that still engages us now. So that song's very much an example of a cinematic song for us, where the moods and the rhythms go up and down dynamically and shift urgency, all for the purpose of echoing the drama of a little story.
My uncle has a country place no one knows about. He says it used to be a farm before the motor law. And on Sundays I elude the ice and off the turbine freight. Too far outside the wire where my white-haired uncle waits. We'll be right back.
from the stunning new 40th anniversary release of Moving Pictures, Red Barchetta. The album became the band's first to reach number one on the Canadian Albums Chart. It also hit number three on the U.S. Billboard 100 and U.K. album charts and sold over 5 million copies in the U.S. alone. Once again, Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, and pilot/guitarist Alex Lifeson.
YYZ, it's interesting. We were coming back from the studio when we were making the record, just for a break back home. And on the way back, they had tuned in the identifier for Toronto Airport, which is YYZ. So it's that, 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 that. And I think it was Neil. Maybe it was Neil and Geddy. I was actually flying the plane at the time. And Neil and Geddy were in the back, and they said, that's a really cool rhythm in that identifier. And you could see YYZ on the radio tuned in. And that's how that whole beginning part came about, to play the Morse code of YYZ.
The rhythm stuck in my head. I said, guys, let's, you know. So then thematically, we said, well, let's use that airport, so much a part of our lives in those days and after. Let's use that as a metaphor, in a sense. And again, in a playful way, there was no sense, okay, this part is this part and all that. But there is the sense of bustling and coming and going and the grand emotion of that middle section of what airports can be. In our lives, airports were rich with symbolism, departures and comings and goings, and separations and meetings. You know, that's the exotic nature of travel to analysis guitar solo, for sure. He wove in that kind of Eastern mode, which gives a sense of the exotic of the airports. When you look at the departures up there, you see Amsterdam, you see Shanghai, and all these places. Airports are, you know, when you strip away the modern day tedium, they're pretty romantic places. So all of that, I think, informs the composition side of YYZ too.
Pretty much is about coming back home. It's that call to home. Being a band that spent so much time on the road, whenever we would check in for that flight home and we would see that YYZ ticket on our bag, it was always really exciting. So we wanted to basically put a song together about that. Even though it's instrumental, it's about our town, it's about kind of where we came from. Good to come home.
Nominated in 1992 for a Grammy for Best Rock Instrumental, that's YYZ. You can hear it now in perfect sonic quality with an additional live version from Rush's March 25th, 1981 concert on the 40th anniversary deluxe editions of Moving Pictures. Here's Alex Lifeson on Living in the Limelight as the guitar player in Rush.
I think we've always been a little uncomfortable with it. It's okay when you're with a couple of the fans after the show, signing autographs or just chatting for a bit. It can be a lot of fun, and I think that contact is important. But sometimes it gets a little bit out of hand, and really what it is it's embarrassing. If, you know, you're just a person, and this is what you happen to do, and a lot of people happen to like what you do for us. For me, I think it's embarrassment more than anything else. I don't think we're really shy, but we're just, you know, normal everyday guys, eh? You know, we all have families, and we've all been doing this for a very long time, so nothing is really new to us, and it's not a rock and roll lifestyle for us anymore. It was at one time, but, you know, things change. The music is still important. When I say I know I speak for all of us. I love playing live. It's really a thrill, and it's a charge, and we all really, really enjoy it a lot. But touring is not the fun that it used to be. It's grueling, and it's tiring. You know, our families are getting older, and we're not there for most of the time. And now it's a high price to pay.
Neil Peart.
Yeah, it was just my attempt really to explain how it felt. I tried to explain that extroverts do not understand introverts. The idea of being shy to them is some kind of poison. If you think back to school days, I read a quote recently that all of us are the people that high school made us. Yeah. Okay, and if shy people in high school, I remember they're stuck up. They're conceited. They think they're better, you know, just for being shy. So that's that persists. And if you are that way in a public field, unfortunately, it's a huge disadvantage. But it just made me uncomfortable and embarrassed. And I just tried to explain. And I can't tell you how many younger musicians, authors, and athletes and actors have come up to me in life and said what that song came to mean. Suddenly they understood, I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend. Michael Chabon, the author, just said that to me recently when he had a book signing, and with all this expectation of people thinking they know him and his work so well, and he doesn't know them at all. You know, it's a real disadvantage. And there's an old English expression when somebody calls your name, said, hey, George, you have me at a disadvantage. And it is. I don't know you, you know. So anyway, I was just trying in a really neutral sort of way and hopefully a poetic sort of way just to explain how it felt and, hey, what mattered. You know, really what mattered to us was always the music. It was to be, not to seem.
Geddy Lee.
Alex and I have always adapted to the spotlight a little easier than Neil has. He's more intensely private person than Alex and I are. At the same time, we were all going through those feelings and coming to terms with the fact that we were starting to be successful, and there were a lot more demands made on our time, and we were trying to figure out the kind of success we wanted to have and the kind of band we wanted to be at that time. You're preoccupied, unfortunately, with being successful at certain points of being successful, and I think it came out in that song.
Living on a lighted stage approaches the unreal.
paraphrasing William Shakespeare's play As You Like It's opening lines of the All the World's a Stage speech, Limelight. It hit number 4 on the U.S. Billboard Top Tracks chart and was played on almost every Rush tour. Here's Getty on how they created the music.
We do write separately, and Neil writes lyrics separately, but there's always a point where we attack each other's work and get really inside of it, and, you know, lyrically and musically. You know, I have to feel very good about the words, obviously, because I have to sing them. I have to be able to feel that they're singable, and I have to be able to relate to them. Even if I can't relate to them to myself, if I can relate to them objectively, that's enough for me, if I believe that they're valid in one way or another. So there's a lot of conversation, a lot of talk, and a lot of getting into the lyrics, and at the same time, the music. So even though we come up with the raw parts individually, we assemble everything together. And if something's not right, then as a unit, we correct it, you know, as opposed to just saying, okay, well, we've assembled this song, but there's a little bit of music that's funny. It's not working here. So you go off into your room and fix it, will you? You know, we all get involved at that point, and that's what really helps a song gel, I think. You know, it's one thing to come up with parts. It's another thing to make it into a living thing, which is, you know, a song unto itself.
And the men who hold high places must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart.
Recorded at the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto on March 25th, 1981, Closer to the Heart. You can find it and the entire concert on the 40th anniversary deluxe versions of Moving Pictures by Rush. I'm Dan Neer, and speaking of choice, here's Neil Peart.
To me, freedom of choice is the elemental condition of life, period. You know, that's as far as it goes with me, and that's the philosophy that Ayn Rand espouses, and that's the thing about her work that appeals to me. You know, I don't think that she was any kind of a communist hunter or anything, because the whole premise of her work is founded on freedom of choice.
period, you know, regardless of whether you want to choose to be a communist or not, it doesn't matter. That's never been either explicit or implicit in her work, or I don't think in mine. There's nothing negative about it, and it's the cynical kind of people who find the negativity in it, as with anything else. You know, most people tend to think positively when they're thinking about things like that, and if they have a particular philosophy or something, it's not usually based on negativism. It's not based on putting somebody down, it's based on putting something up. And that's the same way with my feelings too. I feel strongly about the nobility of things. I feel that certain things are beautiful. I think that life is beautiful and people are beautiful in the truest sense of things, you know, that things that people do are important and can be good. I think that there is a sort of a nobility of life involved in it all, and freedom of choice is elemental to all of that. Well, that's basically what I'm getting at, is the holier-than-thous, you know, people that think that because they believe something, everyone else should too. The proselytes and, you know, the people who would have you, if you can't be my way, then you better be dead, you know, and that's the whole attitude of it, and that's the bad side of it. It's too sickening to me. I just hate having anything rammed down anybody's throat, and especially my own.
Choose up, but that's clear. I will choose.
one of the songs from the entire March 25th, 1981 concert found on the deluxe packages of the 40th anniversary of Moving Pictures, That's Free Will. Rush always embraced technology, which didn't always return the embrace. Once again, Neil Peart.
We got tortured by technology because, you know, we're always trying out everything as it comes along, and the lack of reliability. And back in the spirit of radio has a sequencer in it, 1979. So I had to be able to hear that every night on stage and play along to it. And so it had to be loud enough to make me deaf. And also I had to play accurately enough tempo-wise. The whole song goes by and then the chorus comes, and it has to be in and out right. So that was a great exercise of discipline that has served me really well, to learn to manipulate time and to maybe push the tempo a little bit, but still when that sequencer arrives or the various effects that we use nowadays that are time relevant, I have to be with them, you know, when it gets there.
Alex Lifeson.
Spirit of Radio was just really a statement on the way radio was going, FM radio, how it had really changed since the mid-70s, and progressively became more and more formatted, and it lost the whole essence of FM radio as we remembered it. But I think it's coming around again. I know in Toronto there are a few stations that are really playing a wide variety of music now, and it's really quite healthy. And hopefully things will go in that direction. I think they will, only because there's so much music around right now, so much diverse music, a lot of really good stuff, a lot of mediocre stuff, but it's real healthy right now. There's lots of it around.
Ever.
Spirit of Radio, which is the last song we can fit in from the new 40th anniversary release of Moving Pictures by Rush. But before we go, let's hear from Geddy Lee on why the band lasted from the day they started out in high school until the unfortunate passing of Neil Peart.
I've been playing with Alex really since I was kind of 17 years old. So. There are not a lot of bands that have hung together as long as us. There are a lot of bands that have kind of come and gone until they get back together. We had a hiatus in the 90s when there was some tragedy that had hit Neil's life, but aside from that, we've been a functional rock band for 40 years. I think you have to have a very healthy sense of humor, which I like to see our sense of humor as a fourth member of the band, really. And I think that's it's kept us in good stead. And when the three of us are together, we're never serious for very long. And even in a business meeting or in a tense situation, somebody is going to start making the other two laugh. And I think it's really critical. And you have to combine that, obviously, with respect for each other's abilities. And our innate Canadianness makes us very polite.
And to bring us up to date, here's Alex, who just released a music project called Envy of None.
Geddy and I have been friends since we were 13 years old. We're best friends. We shared the experience of Rush, but we share a lot of experience, life experiences. You know, we were together just a couple nights ago with a really great dinner. And catching up on what the last couple of weeks have been. They've been my last couple of years. So we're always seeing each other. We're always part of each other's lives. Look, he's working on his book. I worked on this record. We do stuff. And we share our interests. He updates me on how the book is going. I let him know about how Envy of None was going. He asked me about it the other night. Like, we support each other because we're friends. And we respect what we see in each other's life path. And if our paths cross again at some point musically in the future, fantastic. And if they don't, well, fantastic. We'll always love each other and be great friends.
All versions of Rush Moving Pictures 40 are available wherever you buy music. Moving Pictures at 40 All Access was written, recorded, and produced in New Jersey for UME by Near Perfect Productions. All rights reserved. No portion may be reproduced without the written permission of the producers. Special thanks to Jamie Hartley of UME. I'm Dan Meir.
Hi, this is Geddy Lee.
And Alex Lifeson.
From Rush.
Thanks for listening.